Yep. Yep. Raw. And I believe it's pronounced tally-ho.
Ba 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 ba
ba ba ba ba ba.
We've got a Q episode, baby. Ba 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 ba.
Not really
Q. Ba 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 ba. And by the way, Matt sang too.
That's right. And thanks to those of you who commented about the great ba ba ba's. Welcome again back to Yelling at Gaseous Anomalies. I'm your host, Captain Matt Ross, accompanied by my XO number one, Mike Pontone. How are we doing tonight, Mike?
Number one, Michael Pontone, glad to be here. Shout out to the judge who's not supposed to be listening to this. He won't say his name. Absolutely.
No names.
And, speaking of judges and squires and esquires, we have the Squire of Gothos.
Yes, on tonight's episode of Yelling at Gaseous Anomalies, brought to you by me. Yes, that was a fun episode. Tonight's episode is The Squire of Gothos. What's your first impressions of this exciting little story here, Mike?
Trek just keeps getting better or much more closer to what modern Trek would become. Interesting setup, interesting payoff. The plot moves along. There are stakes. There's a visual imagination. There are things that we've not seen in any other place before, and an interesting high sci-fi wrap-up. So, yeah, I enjoyed this episode quite a bit. I got a million questions for you. My wife ended up watching this along with me, and she had a million questions, which led us to go through a whole... I'm kind of proud of this. I gave her a very curated hour and 15-minute watch thing, which got her basically up to date with who Q is and why, but we'll get into that. But Captain, would you like to start off with the plot synopsis?
Sure, but I just want, before we get to that, last time I gave you a hint and I said I wanted to know if your TNG meter went off. That's the next generation of meter. Did it immediately go off when you saw this? I'm just curious, just from your first impression.
Yes, and here's the thing too. This episode had somehow snuck into my unconscious. One, there was a question about it featured on a clip from Red Letter Media. The Red Letter Media, Jay Bauman versus Mike Stolkasa Star Trek trivia show.
Yes, they did several of those.
The original one is right. Burned into my memory. I've watched that so many times. It's a weird kind of comfort thing for me. I find it to be hilarious. It's a beautiful, journey through Trek history with Stolkasa and Bauman and my idol Rich Evans all having impeccable comedic timing. Anyway, they talk about this, and that made me go on a bit of a deep dive as to who this guy was and the debate, which we'll get into, I guess the debate in the canon as to whether or not he was indeed the TNG villain Q.
That's always a debate in between TOS fans and TNG fans, or just not a debate, but a discussion. But let's talk about The Squire of Gothos. This originally aired on January 7th, 1967, as Walter Cronkite would say. And from the TV guide, it says, the Enterprise crew becomes playthings in the hands of Trelane, a powerful being who is using his human visitors as toys. That's a pretty fair assessment of this story.
Quite.
Did you have another synopsis of this, or should we move on from here?
No, we could jump right in. I mean, it's
all right.
I like how it starts off strong, right in new planet, disappearing Sulu, disappearing Kirk, all before the spread of the episode, all before the intro.
It was a really nice cold open. It was kind of like, well, you know, we're flying through like this space desert and Spock and McCoy have some banter over there.
The precise meaning of the word desert is a waterless, barren wasteland. I fail to understand your romantic nostalgia for such a place.
Doesn't surprise me, Mr. Spock. I can't imagine a mirage ever disturbing those mathematically perfect brain waves of yours.
Thank you, Dr. McCoy.
And then they say, we've got a weird planet that no one's ever seen before. And everyone's like, well, how the heck that happened? We've all passed this area before on their way to Beta 3, I think, a colony to drop off again. supplies. So the Enterprise is basically a big, you know, truck. But that planet just appearing out of nowhere is totally bizarre. And you're seeing Sulu stand up, act a little woozy and disappear, and then Kirk disappear. And everyone's like, what in God's name, or not God's name, what in science's name is happening?
Yes.
This story was written by Paul Scheider. He actually wrote Balance of Terror, one of the things that happened when this was written. When he got the assignment, everyone says he's going to be late again, isn't he? And guess what? He was late again when he wrote this.
Well,
episode.
This is bad. I'm going to make a hot take right here. This is better than Balance of Terror, in my opinion.
Well, you're insane. Okay. But this is a lot of fun. This is actually a space fantasy that they called it. And I actually have to agree with it. It was very bizarre. What I really liked is you don't see Kirk and Sulu for a while, and you see the crew acting under Spock's command for a little bit, and everyone's doing what they have to do. They don't need the captain to get things done. Everyone, again, is acting professionally. No tears. Yes, that's a sly Discovery commentary. And they actually prepare a landing party because they find, they think there's some space down there, and they take this new guy, the space meteorologist, to go down with them, Lieutenant Yeager. You also have, what's his name? You got Mr. Lieutenant DeSalle, who actually makes three episodes of Star Trek. And Dr. McCoy. They go down to the planet, you know, loaded for bear, kind of. They have weapons. They have breathing masks. One of the funny things about, by the way they went down, since they were trying to cut costs at every given moment on this thing, when they got the original script, Bob Justman was complaining about all the extensive sets they wanted, which obviously they didn't do. But one thing that the executive producer said, listen, I know you're trying to save a buck, but if we have to dress these guys in red shower curtains again, people are going to laugh at us. So they went with the masks instead, which I think is actually pretty funny. you remember?
Of course.
The red
yes,
shower curtains
naked,
from
now.
The Naked Time.
I always get those confused.
So much nakedness beneath those shower curtains.
Wait.
So that's what...
I've got questions.
Go ahead.
As a man...
We've got answers. We're not Staples.
Okay. All right. Well, it's been a great podcast episode, everyone.
All right. Thank you. Bye-bye. Good night.
He is. So your little Star Trek Bible there.
Yes.
You got to confirm the theory that's the first thing I thought when I saw this. That set was there before they wrote the episode, right?
Like, no.
There was someone got wind that there was a castle set somewhere on the Paramount lot.
Nope.
Really?
Really? They made this whole thing. In fact, they were very proud.
I'm shocked.
Yeah, you should be. I was too. Matt Jeffries said he was very proud of this set. They actually made the drawing room where you see Trelane, which is where our intrepid heroes eventually are found, is actually kind of rounded to help the camera move around. But that was specially made for this episode. So that's actually pretty cool. The set of the jungle area.
It was very well done.
Yeah, it was actually, you know, for the time, it's pretty good. When you see it on a low-def TV, it actually looks better. I mean, you know it's a green-painted wall behind something areas, but you know what? It actually was, I thought, pretty convincing. They come to this, they're expecting the worst. They go to the planet, and they're standing in the middle of a lush garden. And they're like, what in gosh name's going on over here? And that's when DeSalle discovers a castle, and they walk in, and there's something really funny at the entrance. Did you notice what McCoy looked at to his immediate left as they walked down into this drawing room that, like, you know, 17th century France? Did you have any idea what?
I missed that one, Boo.
When they walk down the stairs, there's the salt creature from the Man Trap.
Okay, no, yes, I did notice that. Withdrawn. I was going to ask you about that. I forgot.
They also changed the music to be the music from the Man Trap for just that one scene. So those of our fans of Yelling at Gaseous Anomalies, rewatch it, and you will hear the same music cue for the salt creature in the Man Trap, just as McCoy looks at it, and then he looks at the song like, huh. You know, I thought that was pretty, it's hilarious.
Very impressive. Yes, I was going to ask you about that, but honestly, so much else happened in the episode. I got to start taking notes, I guess.
Yeah, that's
more,
that helps.
Or more detailed notes as we go.
Well, you know, I mean, if you're a big fan of Red Letter Media, then you should be watching when there was a Two Old Men with Paper, as Mike calls the reviews of Star Trek The Next Generation. Papier, I have it in front of me. I use this thing, a book.
Oh.
Those of you who don't know what
impressive.
That is, that's the internet written on trees. So Basically, when the writer made this, that he was thinking like The Most Dangerous Game, which definitely has vibes of that in this. And I would, you could easily see this, those of you who watch more Next Generation, clearly this is where they got the idea for Q, or Roddenberry got the idea for Q, because Roddenberry is the one who made up Q. But Roddenberry had no hand in this script. This was Gene Kuhn and Paul Scheider. So that's what this is.
I mean, that's the thing. Not only does he have, like, a... So not only are the powers obviously similar to Q, he looks and acts and dresses very similar.
Or rather, you could say that Q is dresses very similar to Trelane, because they are modeled each other. Because, you know, this is 1967, and that first episode's for Q was 1980-something or other.
No, oh, yes. Okay, obviously. Duh, obviously, like, one totally. Came before the other. I'm just saying, but yeah, it wasn't even... Where there must have been discussions in the writing room with Q, and they're like, so you mean Trelane? But, like, obviously a very different personality. This person, spoilers for the end of the episode, turns out to be a child, which makes a lot of sense.
It's also, it's actually quite a twist. NBC was concerned that the audience wouldn't get it. They got it. You know, audiences are smarter than we let them on to imagine.
How would they not have gotten this?
I have no NBC. Hey, listen, Standards and Practices was just happy that there was no blood anywhere. So they're like, oh my God. Yeah, I know.
Yeah, I like that. No, I like that there were no red shirts in this. I think that puts a weird dour mood over the episode when someone actually gets snuffed out.
Yes.
And I appreciated that did not occur, because it makes everyone's. Responses and attitudes in line.
What I do like also is there's no conference room scenes. And Next Gen relies too much on conference rooms, even when they're attacked by the Borg. Yeah. Let's have a meeting. They're right outside your darn window. How about you run away first? But the bridge acts as the Ersatz conference room for this. In fact, Jaeger is sitting in Sulu's seat, and they're discussing what to do next with Desaal, Spock, McCoy, and Jaeger on the bridge with Scotty, by the way. So Scotty's in this also for a hot minute. So is Uhura. Anyway, they're beamed down there. And
Uhura.
What did you think of the way the Kirk and Sulu looked? They were like clearly, you know, they were told freeze, don't move.
Yeah.
But this is...
Neither one of them, neither one of them took the mime class at acting school, but that's okay.
Well, this was actually...
They didn't have to hold it for very long.
Well, what's interesting, and Spock says interesting a lot in this episode, what's interesting is that they were... The original script called for there to be, like, marble or fake marble statues of Kirk and Sulu, and Justman says, if I have to see one more thing, Justman's going to be gone from this script, because Bob Justman's like, hey, we can't afford all this stuff. They wanted to have a maze garden. They wanted to have armor everywhere. They wanted to have monstrous beasts that were like in the nooks in the wall. They said, we'll just reuse everything we can. In fact, they saved money by reusing music besides that one music cue. So they kept it kind of really small here. And that's why we have the set that we have. But one of the nice things that I like about it is that you got this weird otherworld feel inside the castle. Like, what the heck's that about? You know, you see all this martial equipment around. You see that harpsichord and piano, harpsichord and mirror and all that neat stuff. It's a really weird thing. It reminded me a little bit of the Martian Chronicles, believe it or not. Did you ever read that?
Of course. Which part? You know, I love the Martian Chronicles.
It's the one where where the astronaut believes he's back on Earth and it's not. It's all an illusion. And because they...
Well, wait, are you talking about the one where, like, they kill everyone?
Yeah, where they kill everyone. But in this one, they're not doing that. It always reminds me of that slightly. Like, it's an all a mind game to try and convince people to get lost. But that aside, getting back to the effects, what that effects with freezing Kirk and Sulu was, that was a green gel light. And they said, just hold it, and when it's time to move, then you can go. And they saved several thousand on this. Mm-hmm. We'll come to the numbers later, and you're not going to believe how much this cost. But then we got some of the more controversial issues, which is Trelane. When they meet him, he addresses the crew members like Jaeger. He speaks in
I
German.
Know.
He speaks in German, says, "You're a German officer. Eins fein."
He goose steps, man.
Yeah. They were saying, "Do we really need that?" That's kind of disturbing. He speaks to Sulu in Japanese. He points out the martial nature of the French originally with DeSalle. Right. And one of the funnier things I do like when they finally get down to dinner is he says, "And look, have some booze, McCoy." I guess, you know, doctor's reputation precedes him across the galaxy. But that was a lot of fun. What did you, when you first saw Trelane, besides thinking, oh, it's Q, kind of, what did you think of him with his, you know?
Everything was written very well, in that in retrospect, he did come off as like a little kid who's like an edgelord. And in retrospect, it really does seem like something along the lines of a 16-year-old who goes online and posts a bunch of racist crap.
Oh, I would go with
just
11.
Just for the simple fact of, yeah, or 11, right. Yes, that's what I meant. Like an 11 or 12-year-old who's just getting the experience of being heard by the world and projecting himself onto the world and is like, you know what, I'm just going to be an edgelord. I'm just going to be cantankerous and challenging folks. I thought it was good. I thought it was a little much when, and I'm not woke. I'm actively anti-woke these days. I believe that some sort of centrist is the only thing that's gonna make us survive. But that being said, my goodness, the stuff that is said to Uhura.
Oh, but that actually was also a controversy. It was going to come to that because Shatner was like, ugh, fine. You know, Shatner was actually didn't actually like that line either. But he says like, oh, a Nubian, you know, from one of your conquests, no doubt. And Kirk says, no doubt. But he says it with like this annoyed boredom, like I'm just dealing with an idiot.
Yes. I did like that a lot, that he gives like a little look to Uhura, like, don't listen to this moron.
Right. And then you have your, by the way, this was written, guess what? Who do you think the Yeoman this was written for originally? Wild guess. Yeoman Rand.
Sounds like Band.
Yeah, exactly. So yes. We have this new Yeoman Yvonne Ross. So no relation. So Yeoman Ross, that's who she is. Played by Vanita Wolf. She is also a fashion model. She sure looks the part, I'll tell you that much. Maybe it's the
I did not
maybe
think
it's the
she was nearly as
look.
Good. I don't know. There was actually something weird about her look. I wasn't a big fan of it.
Well, Trelane, by the way.
Honestly.
Oh, you didn't like her? Yeah. I agree with you.
I liked last week's black stockings, dark hair.
Okay, there's a pattern. I have a very similar pattern. William Campbell plays Trelane. You'll actually see him later as Koloth, a Klingon commander. He also reprises his role in a Deep Space Nine episode. He's actually one of the more fan-favorite actors for Star Trek. I think he did a really incredible job of acting the way he did. He's very professional. You got the impression that he had just enough information to try and figure things out. In fact, that's one of the items Yeager points out. They're so far distant from the Earth, if you were looking at a telescope, an optical telescope, your information would be dated by the light waves that are coming towards you. So he might have seen things in the 1800s, in the 1700s. I mean, he did reference Hamilton and Burr, which is an interesting little tidbit in here. But then we get to the... Go ahead.
I thought that was a very cool sci-fi concept, which would be explored later on in a variety of different sci-fi elements. The idea of that someone way out there would be seeing old Earth. And you saw that in Contact. You saw that in a very weird Joe Dante movie called The Explorers.
Right.
Where they are seeing media from 50 years ago and assuming that that's what Earth is like. The only problem is with this, Trelane, that's not true. I mean, is it? Like, maybe Trelane's omnipotent. He could have just gone to Earth and seen what was going on.
But that's the point. He's not.
Well, that's the question, too. Is he omnipotent?
No, he's not omnipotent. He actually doesn't have all the power in the world. And he's actually one of the things that Yeager points out is like the fire doesn't actually give off heat. It's just a display.
Right.
It's like they're living
in a... the food has no taste.
Right, they're living in a giant screensaver. That's where they're standing, essentially, you know? McCoy points out the liquor, fortunately for him, doesn't have any bite. It has no taste. The food has no taste. But Trelane is able to use his powers to make people to do things. But the first thing that happens is that the crew is able to beam away because Spock finds them. And Trelane comes on board the ship and is mad at everyone. And I love that dissolve when they get back to the drawing room. When our first landing party, Kirk and Sulu beam out, they're like, ah, we escaped. And then Trelane's on board the Enterprise staring at them. And he goes, you know what would be better? I'm mad at Mr. Spock, so everyone's going to have to come down. In fact, he also badmouths Spock. He says, yeah, he's not human, and yet he's an officer? I don't know about that.
I'm Spock.
Surely not an officer. Isn't quite human, is he?
My father is from the planet Vulcan.
And are his natives predatory?
Not generally, but there have been exceptions.
Pointing out this, basically what the writers were trying to do is show the racist hatreds that humanity had at the time. And in this series, people were looking forward to this to hope because no one has that in Star Trek. No one, or at least in this version of Star Trek, everyone's grown up. It doesn't matter if you're black or white or Asian. Everyone works together. They're all the same team. It does not matter. The human team. But at that moment, then they dissolve back to the drawing room. I loved that effect. They're standing on the bridge and then, bam, they're already down back on the drawing room. I know it's an optical thing where they yell cut and everyone runs to the next room. But to me, I thought that it's so seamless. They're all also sitting in the exact same positions that they were on the bridge. I thought that was well done. Did you have any impression on that, or you were just watching?
I was just watching, bud.
You suck.
Again, I thought the story was riveting.
Okay.
But nothing more was going on other than that. I was glued to the screen. I was like, okay, what's going on? I like that they figured out the mirror thing quickly. And in fact, because of the Red Letter Media episode, I was looking at the mirror, and they did do a fantastic job of keeping it the center of many scenes, but not focusing on it too much, not showing it. I like that someone who was not the main cast figures it out. It shows that, hey, these are Starfleet officers who are actually pretty smart. Was it LaSalle?
Yeah, it was Sulu saying that, you know, he doesn't get that far away from it.
Oh, it was Sulu?
Yeah, I believe so.
I thought one of the... Oh, okay, I got that wrong then. I thought that one of the peons...
You mean, it would say the Jaeger or DeSalle, but no, I think it's Sulu who says, so yeah, he doesn't really move too far away from it. I do like the way...
Well, again, I like that it wasn't, you know, Spock or...
Kirk?
Or Kirk.
I do like the way they... the way Kirk calls it out. It's kind of like what you would expect in, like, a period costume piece of like the 19th century. You, sir, I slap your face with a glove. That entire little... I thought that was great.
Don't be too upset by what you see, gentlemen. After all, his actions are those of an immature, unbalanced mind.
But the fact that Trelane couldn't figure out what Kirk was doing by standing across the room was, I thought, kind of hilarious. He doesn't think that the characters or the Kirk and company are smart enough to figure out what he is. He treats them like, well, pets. The sound effect of the mirror breaking drives me crazy with those like weird boing sounds and all that childish comedic stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not it's not funny. It's like reminds me of cheesy 60s TV, which is what that is. But when they do a comeback down again, now they decide to flee, and after they destroy his mirror. But then the planet is chasing them. I thought that was actually kind of cool.
That was pretty sweet,
it was
dude.
Pretty funny. It's like, yeah, but that also proves how otherworldly or unnatural Trelane is at that point, and also kind of scary when you think about it. You know?
Well, that's what I'm saying. Okay, he might not be omnipotent completely, like the level of a Q or a level of spoiler for the end of the episode. His parents, but like. Do you know the Newtons that are involved in moving a planet, buddy?
Yeah.
Or anything else? He could have just snapped the Enterprise out of existence then.
I mean, it's very simple. You just change the gravitational constant of the universe. Why don't you just ask John DeLancey's Q in True Q? Yeah, I'll tell you all about that.
You're way ahead of me. Okay, so wait. This is a fine time. So I watched this with my wife, and she was like, so who is this? I'm like, well, she, you know, there's this debate that he might be a Q. It's like, who's Q? I'm like, I've not shown you anything with Q yet.
I thought Q was a letter of the alphabet.
What is a Q?
It's a letter of the alphabet, as far as I know.
wait, hold on. All good things in the past sequence. So I started with one going to the best of Q, which is the beautiful monologue that he has at the end of Tapestry, where he says that Picard never faced life and death. You know, he drifted from one assignment to the other with no motivation. He didn't leave the away team to get the trapped ambassador. He didn't take command of the Stargazer when their captain died. And it just showed you the very powerful message that Q, despite all his bullshit and despite all his, you know, flair, was trying to impart, that like he saw in John Luke more than John Luke could even see in himself. Mm-hmm. And that is why he chose him to be this linchpin by which humanity would be judged. So I showed her that to whet the appetite a little bit. And then I showed her Deja Q. And about halfway through Deja Q, when she was asking me all these questions about the continuum, I showed her the clip from Voyager where you see the continuum, at least how it would look to people. You remember that little sequence?
That's the one with, isn't it called Death Wish, where one of them wants to die? I believe that's it.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yes. And you get to see that the eternal omnipotence and eternal knowledge, when you've been alive for trillions and trillions of years, is little more than a boring dirt road with the same two books you've already read.
Doesn't that sound like our careers? Stuff. I don't know. Is that our careers? Maybe.
No. This is why I enjoy. I mean, listen, you know, I don't know about you. I've been reflecting on this more. The eve of potentially having, you know, everything goes according to plan, having a first child in a month and a half.
Well, that's exciting.
Intrusive thoughts get worse, where I'm more like concerned about things going wrong in a way that I never did when I was single. But at the same time, I was talking about my wife with this, and I said, on the plus side, there's of course the sweet guarantee of the release of death. So we got that to look forward to.
Woo!
No. What does that mean? Let me just.
It means that you're a dark, twisted individual.
No.
Yes, that is the gift of.
That's from Lord of the Rings, right? Uh-huh. The gift of man. The gift of man that the elves and the dwarves did not get to experience was that men don't have to live forever. Their life is special, and then their destiny after they die is unknown even to Arda, even to the god of Middle Earth. So I think it's actually a very beautiful thing that life ends, and I think that that's what plagued the Q that much, why they all became kind of venial or bored or suicidal when there was no end. Now Trelane,
I'll let you know because I plan to live forever like William Riker, so you know.
I do not believe. I mean, I do love that line, but I wholeheartedly reject the transhumanism movement for me. I do not want to be uploaded to a computer.
I will lock the door on your mausoleum. So there you go. Which probably will be in Brooklyn.
Good. Oh, and let me just say this right now as my living will. If Matt Ross attempts to clone my brain to have a forever friend, stop him from doing it.
Nah, I'm gonna do that. I'm gonna put you in a jar. That's what I'm gonna do. Like Futurama.
No. I'll be so upset, Matt, if my brain's on a jar in your study.
I'll give you the best fish flakes as possible. So. Back in the episode, and after...
Wait, forget about the episode.
Forget about the episode.
You tell me now, Captain, please. I implore you.
Okay.
What is the consensus?
There is no consensus. Most people think it's a Q, but it's
not. Is he a Q?
The answer is no one has an answer. The answer is no. Some people say yes, some people say no. How about this? Who was the dad's voice? Let's go with that at the end. But it's actually revealed.
It sounded like Kirk.
Well, hold on. Let's just go through just the last bit. When Kirk actually challenges Trelane to a final fight, that's where they turn into the most dangerous game, where they're running through the forest. And yes, I know it's a big circle they're running through. But at the end, when Kirk realizes that Trelane knows nothing and he snaps his sword in half and Trelane acts all pouty, then Trelane's parents appear as two floating disembodied voices. Barbara Babcock is the mom, and she's famous from Hill Street Blues, as well as like thousands, or not thousands, hundreds of other TV shows and so forth. She won an Emmys for Hill Street Blues. And the dad's voice is James Doohan, Mr. Scott. What do you think of that?
Oh.
that's pretty cool.
Apparently he was a good voice actor, I've heard, right?
He sure is. The Scottish is all fake. I met him once at a convention, and we knew he was drunk because he put himself in the Scottish accent as we helped him get into the hotel. But that was a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away called Maryland. But the Hunts Point, Maryland, at the Starfleet gathering called Shore Leave, no giant rabbits required. One other noted actor, Eddie Paskey, that's Lieutenant Leslie, was sitting in the captain's chair. Better than Harry Kim in Voyager. So look at that. Everyone gets to sit in the captain's chair. When the captain's away, the lieutenants get to play.
I also did note that Spock actually recorded his log as captain's log.
Well, he is the captain at the time. Just a couple other things. The song of the day was called, was actually 96 Tears by Question Mark and the Mysterians, which is oddly one of my favorite songs. You know that one?
Hmm.
No?
No. You should. Wait, what is it?
It's called 96 Tears by Question Mark and the Mysterians. I'd play it in this podcast, but I know we'd get copyright striked on that one. So take a listen to that one over there. Other things that were going on. What I find mildly humorous on it is that as they were filming this episode, which they were running behind on, the episode Miri just shown on TV. And it actually, you say that now, but it resonated with people for the reason that both the Soviet Union and China exploded atomic weapons. And then you have Miri showing the end of Western civilization. So people were a little bit, they're saying that's disturbing. Here. Which, you know.
It wasn't the end of Western civilization. It was some sort of stupid science experiment on a backlog.
You see it on the screen. It's like Fallout. You see, like, burnt-out cars from the 50s and 60s. So there you go. But, that's what's going on. Also, some, like, Southeast Asian conflict. Vietnam, I hear it's called. So you had all these things going on. So Star Trek...
I like Vietnamese food. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, no, not exactly. The cover of Time magazine Life magazine showed soldiers commiserating the loss of another soldier wounded on the cover. So it was a lot of stuff going on. So people were enjoying Star Trek because it was a good escape, which was the main purpose of this. And then you have something when we get to the trial scene. Did you like the trial scene at the end?
Oh yeah, come on again. Trial scene, how was that not Q directly not taking that? That's the first time we see Q.
That's true.
Second time we see Q.
We don't have to wear wigs, though, in our daily jobs. I'll tell you that much.
yes, same.
The wig was actually wrong at first. They had like a French jurist's wig on, and that actually caused a fight between William Campbell and Shatner. Shatner's like, who cares? It's a wig. No one will notice. And Campbell goes, I'd notice. That's my job. So they had actually called Gene Kuhn down to the set, the executive producer. And he goes, he's right. Get him the right wig. So it actually slowed production for a day.
Hey, so tell me more about this William Campbell guy. I liked him a lot. I thought he was really taking it very seriously.
Yes. But anyway, the cost of this at the time in 1967 was $194,573.
Jesus.
And part of it was for the optical effect of the planet chasing them, the beaming, the set they had to build, the wig, all that stuff. So how much?
They had everyone there,
they
too.
They sure did.
Like, you know, they had the entire cast plus some supporting people. No one was cut out.
And they also ran over overtime several days in a row. The director, McDougal, was behind by a day and a half. Name is Don McDougal. Everyone liked him, but he was running behind. But, by the way, he could not mediate that fight over the wig between Shatner and Trelane. That's the real reason why Gene can't. I'm not getting get involved. I couldn't understand. You got two stars. William Campbell's in like a whole bunch of other TV shows, and you could look that up for you if you want. But The cost of $194,000, cue cash register sound, is $1,876,870.74 in 2024 dollars. That's the most ridiculous thing. By the way, that record I was citing to, 96 tiers, since the minimum wage was ridiculously low, I believe that was $10 for 96 tiers. That would be your like one day salary. And gas was $1.25. But anyway, it's a really short story, but it's a fun story. Yes, I know it's 45 minutes, but you know the two godlike beings said, "We're sorry for our kid." I do like that little bit where William Campbell really does the pout well. "But I was winning. You said I could keep going. It's not fair." Wah. I've tried to ban the phrase "it's not fair" from my household, from my children. Doesn't work, by the way.
Oh, yeah. Well, life is not fair. As soon as everyone figures that one out.
Yeah, you always say that, Dad.
So this is the amazing thing that I find about just the concept of writing a 45-minute episode. There are episodes like The Enemy Within, The Man Trap, this, Conscience of the King, that don't stop. And everything is always moving, and you're getting a little bit more information every 2 or 3 minutes, and something is happening maybe every 6 or 7 minutes that kind of drastically changes everything that is going to come before, going to happen. There are good stakes and consequences, and yet it's still a pretty thin story, right? It's not like there's any deep plot or mystery or anything going on. Like, then what happens to the writing on some piece of crap like Shore Leave, where you have to insert a 10-minute fist fight with the crazy Irish guy? It's like, what?
You really don't like that Finnegan fight. You got great music for that, too, and you find out about Kirk. I don't know. A lot of Trek is uneven. I mean, like, take Star Trek Discovery. Well, you can take it and throw it somewhere else. By the way,
take it to the grave.
By the way, just as a quick shout out to Molly and the Old Man. So, welcome to Yelling at Gaseous Anomalies. Check out their podcast on YouTube and all their catchers. They do an excellent job of discussing Star Trek Discovery. But you look at any of these modern shows. What they do is they take one story, a very scant story, and they stretch it out to 10 episodes. It's, you know, you wonder how a lot of these things are.
Well, yeah.
I think...
you kidding me, dude?
It's terrible.
That was Picard season 2.
Please.
I mean, the entirety of Picard season 2 could have been done in a two-parter.
It could be done in like 20 minutes. Please. It's the it's the season that shall not be named. It was really bad. Well, actually,
it probably was the worst episode, the worst season of Star Trek I've ever seen.
I didn't like season 1 of Picard. I didn't like season 2 of Picard, and I tolerated season 3. It was the best of the Picards, but that's like, wow, a 5 out of 10. Woo! It's
at least there were little snippets of Picard season 1 that I dug. Like, I liked that. I know that everyone craps on him, but I liked Elnor. I liked that whole monk Romulan thing.
You liked it when he went to the rings and went to Mordor to drop it off to Frodo? Yeah, it doesn't make any sense.
I dug that he was so good with a sword that he could counter people with directed energy weapons.
Yeah.
And I love a badass line, and I'm not going to lie. When I was going around court in my head, when someone was going to pick a fight to me and I knew that they were going to lose, if we went up and put it in front of the judge, I was just like, choose to live.
Oh, you know, that's still a terrible character. They've ruined so many things. I think the Romulan warrior nunks and nuns, and I don't know, they don't know what the hell they're doing. I honestly don't. Like, the entire concept that the Romulans didn't like cybernetics, yet in TNG they talk about, you know how many Romulan cyberneticists would like to visit Data? Don't you guys even watch the show?
Well, Terry Metalis did, boo.
Well, he did an okay job of referencing everything. That's true.
Oh, shut up.
Yeah, it's true. It's reference-a-rama, like Lower Decks, reference-a-rama.
True.
It is reference-a-romula. Anyway, so let's. I don't think there's really much else to say here because they've escaped and they go on their way to Beta 3. That little banter at the end, how do we characterize Trelane? A small boy. It's 100% correct, and very naughty one at that. So what do you, let's just, is there any like WTF moments for you in this episode or weird things? In this?
The racist rant dropping Nubian princess, you know, spoils of the conquest about Aura. Yeah. My goodness.
That's your WTF moment. I don't actually have a WTF moment in this at all. I took everything in stride. To me, it was just a fun romp.
Yeah.
But, so that,
and we've been talking about Echoes of Future Trek the entire time.
That's quite true. But, you know, it's a good proto-episode. I mean, it's simple. You know, they run into a weird godlike alien. They defeat it. Then they move on. This is a common theme in Star Trek, but it's also a common theme in many science fiction stories out there. So it's not just Star Trek. So let's wrap it up and get to our final ratings. Mike, you go first. What would you give it on our very scientific 1 to 10 scale?
You know, it's going to shock you. I'm giving this a 9 out of 10.
Wow, a 9 out of 10 for Mike. Oh, that's...
Yeah, don't know what to say. I was very impressed. It moved at a very steady clip. Kept me entertained. It was funny. Had interesting visuals. So, yeah, even though I feel like there are other ones that might have had a better narrative premise, this was the one that was very Star Trek. It could have just been a TNG episode, obviously, and from beginning to end, nothing to complain about. No notes.
You know, I'm going to surprise you. I'm going to be actually lower than you. I was either thinking a 7 or an 8. I enjoy the story for what it is. But for me, even then, when I saw it on standard definition television, I think the cheesiness in some of the sets, even though I now know there's nice little tidbits here and there all over it, you know what? I'm gonna give it an 8. I enjoy the story. I definitely like Trelane, and not just from Echoes of Future Trek. I like the idea that he was an alien child. I do like that, but it raises more questions than answers, and it does come, you know, it's a kind of a silly side diversion, but there is no central stories in the original TOS. There's no ongoing arc other than they all exist. But the writing is, I find, a little bit tighter. The conversations feel a little bit more natural. So I do enjoy it. That's why I'm giving it an 8. Gene Kuhn is responsible for that. He, like, polishes off the stories over there. By the way, this came in second to... I Dream of Jeannie, I believe it was, in the ratings. I mean, sorry, to Bewitched. So it's actually, most people like this as well. It's a good distraction. I still like the salt sucker in the front. I think that's still my favorite thing. Just to let everyone know, this is when the show is getting more and more mail of fans writing in. And I got to share you one of the letters that Roddenberry got on this, if you'll partake in. I think this is actually funny. If you don't mind, here we go. Dear Mr. Roddenberry, I would like to tell you how very, very much I enjoy Star Trek. As a science fiction buff from way back, I had almost despaired of ever seeing anything on TV that was not meant for children, and not very bright children at that. I sincerely hope your program will be continued next year. If not, I think I'll kill my all my present bras and never buy another living one. That's what it says. I'll kill all my present bras. With very warm wishes.
This is being written by some crazy cat lady on the street who doesn't know what the hell's going on.
Edna Z. That's what it's written from. But I like the response. Dear Mrs. Z, thank you for your delightful letter. Your first paragraph did provide our laugh of the day. Sincerely, Gene Roddenberry. It was... This is also an interesting thing. William Campbell said that in his lifetime, he met 5 people he found impossible to dislike. And strangely enough, 2 of them were on Star Trek, DeForest Kelly and Gene Kuhn. And he actually loved his role. He said he never forgot it.
Mm-hmm.
Ah. Yeah, he really ate that role up. It was fabulous.
Yeah, I could have told you that from a mile away. That guy was having a blast. Eating up the scenery and everything.
I actually liked all the characters in this. I like the stoic leader of Kirk in this. I like Spock's very, like, his objection to Trelane.
Is that what you're doing, challenging me?
I object to you. I object to intellect without discipline. I object to power without constructive purpose.
Oh, Mr. Spock, you do have one saving grace after all. You're ill-mannered.
Actually, you know what? I'm going to change something. My WTF moment is watching Uhura smile as she's being forced to play the harpsichord because she's like a little bit too into it. But
well, I think that she was enjoying that she could, you know, if I could suddenly play an instrument, I'd be pretty psyched.
I guess so. I'd be a little bit freaked out that suddenly I'm able to do something because a super being is making me do it. But anyway, that's basically it. Anything else you want to talk about on this episode or anything else?
Quick aside. One, do you play an instrument?
No, I haven't played an instrument in a while. I was not musically inclined. You can ask my music teachers in school.
Sadly, me neither.
My kids are into piano, yeah.
And other thing, aside from Q and what's his name? That Romulan character,
yeah.
The captain, Tomalak. Were there any other recurring individual villains in TNG?
Recurring TNG villain. Well, the Cardassians.
No. Recurring individuals, not like the Borg.
No,
like
I don't think
person.
So. I think it's just Tomalak. Not that I could think of. Tomalak and, that's pretty much about it. You had nothing. It was like an alien of the week type of thing. Or nose piece of the week for Voyager.
And I assume there was no one recurring on TOS.
Now they actually try to do that several times. The closest they come to that with repeating characterizations, which we'll discover later, is Harry Mudd.
Oh boy, right.
Yeah.
Right. Mudd comes back.
And Mudd comes back twice, in fact, once in the live action and once in the animated series. There's yep. The Klingons appear several times, but you'll get to see them sooner or later. So that's basically it. But I think that pretty much wraps us up here for tonight. And I guess we'll be ready for the next episode. Right, Mike?
Yeah. And is it true? Next one is Arena.
Yes. Next one is Arena. Everyone's favorite.
Immortalized in Cable Guy.
Yeah. Immortalized in Cable Guy. There's actually a really hilarious commercial for a Star Trek video game with Kirk and the Gorn captain. If you don't know the one we're talking about, you will get to meet the Gorn for the first time. The real Gorn, not the strange new world xenomorph nonsense. That's coming up on our next episode of Yelling at Gaseous Anomalies. So if you want to contact us, you email us at yellingatgas@gmail.com. And if you want to help support the channel, you can check out our new merch store at TeePublic. I'll be placing links below in our YouTube page. If you want to buy
merch,
you know, help support the channel, buy a shirt, buy a phone case, get some stickers, you name it, it's there. So take a look for that in the links below. And as always, live long and prosper, Mike.
And you, and to raise money, if you guys send me $100, I will forward the slash fiction I've written for between Matt and I and a starship.
Please don't do that.
Matt hasn't even read it yet. Let me tell you, it's some spicy stuff.
No slash fiction, please. Anyway, well, listen again. Everyone, thanks for tuning in. We'll see you next time on Yelling at Gaseous Anomalies. Live long and prosper, and see you out there. Have a good night, Mike.
Thank you, Captain. Have a good night.